Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the show. This is the Pop Rocks Radio Talk Show. I'm your host, pop art painter Jamie Rocks, and this is the big show. You found it. I sure am glad you did. Today, I'm very excited. We've got a lot going on today. Well, there's a lot going on in general today, but in our little corner of the internet, I've got a fantastic guest lined up today. It's got a new movie out, a feature movie called The Accompanist, and I'd like to welcome Mr. Frederick Keeve to the show. Frederick, how are you?
I'm doing great. Amid all the, everything that's going on, I think that, it's a crazy time in the world, but it's all good. You know, I think a lot of enlightenment and more awareness about not just Black Lives Matter or this, Blackout Tuesday and everything that's going on today, but just, I think all people should be treated with respect and kindness and love, and that goes across the board. So I think
absolutely,
it's a little crazy time, but that's why we do our art, right, to sort of enlighten people.
Exactly. And, I don't know what happened somewhere along the way. I learned this as a kid. I'm sure you did too. Treat people how you would like them to treat you. It's pretty basic. That was missed at some point.
Yeah.
Some people didn't get that memo. Just don't be a creep, man.
Yeah, I think I feel like I'm kind of an old-fashioned guy, and just those good old-fashioned values of, kind of that are ingrained in our culture, hard work, doing the right thing, and all of that, I think it's treating other people respectfully. I think those never go out of style. That's something that is, just basic to even our Constitution and freedom of speech and people's rights to respect themselves. And I think it goes to us as artists. You paint and you do your wonderful visual medium, which is one of the things that I don't do. I do a lot of other creative
things
like write, direct, and what?
I was saying one of
no,
the
I,
things. Frederick, you do it all, buddy, man. You got it covered up. There is nothing
but
Frederick doesn't
paint.
Do except be mean to people.
Yeah, that's true. Well, we all have our different talents, so. Yeah.
That's awesome. Let me ask you, because you had mentioned, in this movie, but in particular, but you do all these things. You act in it, you produced it, you wrote it, directed, and also you're a composer. I mean, how cool is that? What started first, like for young Frederick? Where did all this begin? I'm just curious.
Well, I guess, as a lot of us want to give our moms and dads credit for the good stuff that happened when we were young. And, my mom had read somewhere that if you play an instrument when you're young, it helps develop a lot of good things in your mind. It helps develop your brain and all kinds of good stuff. So she started me with piano lessons, and I guess I must have liked it because I started at 4 or 5 and just kept on going until, through high school. And then I went to UCLA and I was a music major there, which was a lot of fun. So music has always been a part of my life in so many different ways. And I've never could quite figure out how to integrate it into a professional capacity, because I think it was back in the day, let's say the 70s, when I was, just a young buck and I was writing songs, I saw that the music industry was tough. I mean, it was very competitive, and I just didn't know if I could be a singer-songwriter. I didn't know if that was my path. And so I kind of took this exploration through the few decades to kind of come to the realization that I could write music for my films. And so that's kind of been my main outlet. And then with this current film that's just being released today on, exciting, finally release day, June 2nd on Amazon and iTunes.
Awesome.
I thought, yeah, thank you. Yeah, it's been a long time coming. It's been about, 20 months of working on the film in different aspects. But
wow.
I figured that I could integrate my love of music into storytelling. And that's kind of what I've done, especially with The Accompanist, because it's a gay love story, which was one of my goals. I wanted to portray gay male love in particular realistically, because someone brought up a point in one of the other interviews, which I thought was interesting, that you can see two females together, and that's kind of okay with a lot of people. But seeing two men together, that's not necessarily widely accepted still in our culture. So doing, you know, showing gay male love realistically and in combination with an art form like ballet, which isn't, you know, that widely spread or, you know, disseminated in our culture, with classical music, it was kind of like I have this agenda to get this stuff out there and see if people would respond to it. But it all comes back to the music, because my character, Jason Holden, is an accompanist to the ballet studio, which are in the Tate's life, I actually am an accompanist at a very renowned ballet studio, Westside Academy of Dance, or Westside School of Ballet, as they're known, been in Santa Monica, California for over 50 years, and a very accomplished school. But I got the idea for this film from the work that I did playing for ballet classes. So I knew the dancers, I knew the teachers, I knew a lot about ballet, but in relation to music. So there's a lot of music in this film, in this 93-minute film. It's my own original piano music mixed in with gorgeous, you know, Rachmaninoff and Prokofiev and, you know, our Chopin and wonderful composers.
Nice.
So hopefully, you know, it seems like over our 10 months of being on the film festival circuit that audiences have really responded to the film.
That's awesome. That is very cool. Well, you know, it's interesting to me that it would go that route. Well, and it's interesting too that, you know, I sometimes forget. Like you said, I'm a painter. That's, you know, I'm in the art world, and sometimes, you know, you do forget that, especially when dealing, you know, to me, someone's sexuality, it isn't that big of a deal. Or at least it's not like something I take super note of. You know, just because I'm surrounded by it, you know, and I don't mean that in a bad way. I mean, it just isn't that thing. But you're right, a lot of people aren't in that world, and they, I suppose that's probably true with women, gay women and gay men not being as accepted as gay. You know, I don't know. It's just, if you got a problem with that, man. But I'm glad you're making movies to put this out there, because maybe if more media gets out there, it won't be a big deal to people, you know? Not to make light of anybody's sexuality or anything, but hopefully expressing that correctly.
No, I agree with you. I mean, to me, and, you know, I grew up in Santa Monica, so we're, you know, Southern California, and it's genuinely, generally, you know, the coasts are more liberal than our, you know, Midwest or Southwest or the South. So just generally growing up in a more liberal environment, but I feel like if, you know, in certain parts of the country, I think if someone revealed their sexuality, like if a guy, a young guy reveals that he's gay, I mean, I think they could be killed or something. I mean, it's a very, in certain areas. So I think it, you know, to us, and probably in Florida, it's a lot more liberal. So, you know, we can kind of, it's more accepted. So I think, but the great thing about art you know, whether it's painting, which I really respect you for being, you know, a talented painter and sort of using visual medium, because, well, and I kind of do the same thing, but I paint a canvas with film. So it's not so far apart, but I think that that's, for me as a filmmaker, that's the purpose of why I have a passion for film and why I do what I do, is because I want to obviously entertain people. I want people to go see my films and I want audiences to enjoy them. But my purpose in life, I feel, is, or at least a big one, is to enlighten people, you know, to make them more aware with the films that they see. Because I've seen how powerful film is. I've seen it change people's lives. When I was newly married, and my wife, my ex-wife and I lived in Pacific Palisades, which is also kind of close to all these coastal cities here. It's close to Malibu and Santa Monica. Nice area. We had a really nice couple with two young kids who just, you know, Barry and Faith. And Barry was a successful accountant in New York for one of the big eight firms. And he went and saw Field of Dreams, the Kevin Costner movie. And he literally saw the movie. It changed his consciousness in some way where he went home to Faith and he said, "Honey, I saw this dream and I'm going to follow, you know, I'm inspired to quit my job and we're going to move to California because I want to be an accountant in the entertainment industry." And he literally just quit his job and they moved. And wow. So I feel like, yeah, I mean, you know, that's a pretty bold thing to do with a family, but I feel like films,
that's amazing.
And across the board, whether it's, you know, Mississippi Burning or, you know, films about racial conflict or, you know, spirituality or sexuality, I feel like films can really wake people up. And that's why I'm so passionate about film. And that's why I'm so passionate about this particular film, because I really threw everything in this film and the kitchen sink. You know, I mean, it's got magical realism. It's got an abusive gay relationship. It's got family drama and family tragedy. And it's just, it's all in there. But they're all kind of aspects of, I mean, it comes from my imagination, but, you know, as an artist, you pull from your own experiences. So I don't know. I think, and I'm working on the standalone sequel, which is, I'm not done with these characters. So we have The Accompanist Awakening, which will get made and be out there, you know, sometime probably next year. So it's been an interesting journey because, you know, as an artist, you never know. And with painting as well, you know, you can think that you've painted the greatest thing you've ever done and maybe nobody looks at it or, you know, nobody feels the same way you do. And you're going, well, what's wrong with these people? This is like the greatest thing since Da Vinci or Rembrandt. And you never know with film because there's a lot of good films that never get seen, never get distributed, for some reason, like I was watching with my daughter the other night, Me, Earl, and the Dying Girl, an indie film that made a few years ago. That's fantastic, but it just kind of died. You know, it just didn't do well, and people didn't respond to it. But it had come out right about the same time, I think, as The Fault in Our Stars. Well, The Fault in Our Stars was you know, based on a bestseller, and people, you know, it's like, when I was a very young kid, I know this is a long time ago, but for those of you who remember Love Story, Ally McGraw and Ryan O'Neill, you know, produced by Robert Evans of Paramount, there was no bigger film ever than that film. That film, you know, and she was dying. I mean, she had cancer or whatever. And this was, you know, like a Romeo and Juliet kind of tragedy, you know, tragic love story, but audiences really responded to it. So, you know, it's all about timing. I feel like the timing with The Accompanist is good because it's brought up a lot of salient issues that are out there in people's consciousness that people might be interested in. So we'll see. So far, so good.
Well,
been a good ride.
And now, folks, a couple quick messages from some of our show sponsors. Stay tuned. We'll be back with the rest of the interview after these quick messages.
There are everyday actions to help prevent the spread of respiratory diseases. Wash your hands. Avoid close contact with people who are sick. Avoid touching your eyes, nose, and mouth. Stay home when you are sick. Cover your cough or sneeze. Clean and disinfect frequently touched objects with household cleaning spray. For more information, visit cdc.gov/COVID-19. This message brought to you by the National Association of Broadcasters and this station.
Aloha. If you have stress in your life or even anxiety and panic, I want to invite you to the Anxiety Coaches Podcast for a way out. The Anxiety Coaches Podcast is a relaxing and inspiring show bringing you lifestyle changes to calm your nervous system and help you heal. Heal anxiety, panic, and PTSD for life. We bring you 2 episodes every week. There's no need to walk this path alone. Join us for a relaxing, informative, and inspiring time and start your journey out of anxiety panic. That's anxietycoachespodcast.com. Aloha.
Hey there, my name is Paige Beattie, and I am the founder of Hats On and Hats Off, which are 2 separate companies but aligned by the same philosophy of raising cancer awareness and forming smiles. Hats On is a for-profit corporation that sells cancer-specific hats to be proudly worn by you in hopes of raising awareness. A percentage of the proceeds will be donated to Hats Off, which is a nonprofit corporation raising money to buy wigs for cancer patients who can't afford them. That's where we're forming smiles. I believe cancer has touched almost everyone's lives in one way or another. A friend, a family member, a friend of a friend. So please, visit our website, www.hatsonhatsoff.com, to learn how you can help raise awareness and form smiles.
Ruxgear, the online webshop of high-end luxury merchandise and products, all featuring original pop art paintings. From La Jolla to Miami to London, www.merch.jamierox.us.
Yeah, and, you know, I was just, as you were saying that, I clicked over and onto your IMDb page. And for those who don't know that are listening, I don't know how you wouldn't know this, but IMDb is kind of a, for people in entertainment, movies and film, especially, it's kind of a resume of their past work and what have you. And, you know, Frederick's been in 1 or 2 small things. No, he's been in about a bazillion things here. I'm scrolling through. Man, you've been, you know, and ran the gamut. You know, I'm looking. Well, here you go. Club owner from People you know, I can see it. Upscale man in Westworld. I didn't know this. This is a surprise. A sleaze stack in Land of the Lost. How about that? No,
that
you've been in some really.
That...
No, there's. Girl Gone, a bunch of stuff.
Every film has a story, whether you're, you know, featured background and you just like to work. So if you're not working on, you know, like a bigger role, sometimes I would do like if the movie had people in it that I liked, or like I did sort of a little featured part in A Star Is Born because I just thought that was going to be a big movie. I wanted to be a part of it. But the
Lady Gaga, come on.
I love her. And, you know, it's so funny because, like, with Land of the Lost, again, all good intentions, they put, like, what, $110 million into it, and it just kind of bombed. You know, so you just don't know what's going to hit. But with that, it was a big movie. It was it was Will Ferrell and a great cast. And they had the director, Brad Silberling, had auditions. And so in order to be a sleaze stack, you had to be I think I was on the short end because I'm 6'3", so I'm already pretty tall. But he got some, like, athletes, model athletes, guys that were very tall. And we had to do this. I mean, it was just the weirdest audition. Like, we went in this room, and Brad was there with his assistant director. Brad's very soft-spoken. He would just very, very soft-spoken. But the director was like the woman who was his AD was like a drill sergeant. So he would say something and you could never hear. But then she would shout it out like you were in the military, like in boot camp. So, but you know, we had to, in order to possibly be hired for this job, and it was a good one. I mean, I worked for 4 months at Universal. It was the big production. We had about 6 sound stages, made really good money. I mean, it was a great job.
Yeah.
But in order to do that, you first had to be very tall. Secondly, you had to be somewhat athletic because they had us walk on this bar all across the audition room. And do this little, like, it was like a, what do you call it? Like a maze. You had to kind of follow and do these things. And if you fell off, well, you probably weren't going to get hired because when we actually did the film, we were in the, one of the sets, sound stages was the old Jaws set. I guess it was used as a tank or something for Jaws. And we literally, so we used all the KY jelly in the city. There was no KY jelly left. We had bought it all because we could not get on our rubber suits. We were from head to toe with the flippers and the headpieces. We could not get them on because they were so tight unless we were slathered in KY jelly. So we had all the KY jelly. We had these suits on. It was a heat wave in the summer. It was like 110 degrees. This project was so top secret that when we went to the commissary, when we went to eat, we were disguised. Like, we had hoods and capes because they were doing everything top secret. But see, every film is different. That one was fun because you really did have to be somewhat coordinated because you had these huge flippers and they had these little tiny stairs that you had to walk down into the set. So you had like 100 of these little tiny stairs. And even though these athletic guys, they hired guys that were volleyball champions and whatnot, they were falling. And also you couldn't hear and you couldn't barely see because of the headpiece. So you had the drill sergeant AD shouting out the directions, you know, like action or do this, you're going to do this, action. And then you had to walk. You couldn't see. You couldn't hear. It was like really an adventure. And you couldn't eat anything because you had your headpiece on. So you were fed through a straw by, you know, PAs or whatever. So all of this to say is that all of these things kind of add up to an experience in the industry. Like, I wouldn't change that experience for anything. I met great people, but, you know, not to take away from the accompanist, but, you know, it was really magical how the whole thing just kind of came about from just sitting in the ballet studio and just making, you know, an intention that, hey, I want to show a beautiful gay love story. Realistically, I want to show beautiful dance and beautiful music. And then, you know, going, writing the script, taking 3 months, and then, you know, starting to raise money for the film. And what's unusual about this film, and I haven't talked about this too much in my interviews, but usually, you know, when you're doing a like a TV show or even a big film, you don't really have a lot of rehearsal. You just got to kind of go in and be on, right? You know, because you're you're professional, so you go in and do your thing. With this, we had a long period in, let's see, this is 2020. We marketed in 19. So I guess it was 2018. We had, up to filming in October and November, we had from maybe when everybody was cast, like by March or April, we had all those months to rehearse, to get coached. We worked with some great acting coaches, and we got to really know each other. And I cast a lot of people that I was already friends with anyway, because I had known their work through working with them, like at the Odyssey here in LA, you know, through theater or film or whatever. Mm-hmm. So what was unusual about this film, and if it plays well for audiences, which it seems to, is that we had months in to develop our characters, to really be.
Nope. Are you still there? We either lost him or we lost me. I don't know which.
Oh, I got you.
Okay, there he is.
We were probably out for about 10 seconds. But I was saying what's so unusual about this process is that we had maybe April, May, June, July, August. So we had about 6 months of, you know,
oh, wow.
on and off. Everybody's working and doing other stuff. But to develop these things. So when we got there in October, and, you know, it's indie film. We don't have, like, a super, you know, we don't have a big shooting schedule. We don't have a 60-day schedule.
Right.
Or we don't have a 40 or even a 20. We have, like, what do we have, 5 days or 10 days or, you know, not a lot of time. So, and the days were really long with independent films. You don't just shoot 8 hours and go home. You shoot, like, 12 hours or you shoot 16 hours sometimes.
Right.
You know, so, but, yeah, so I really, I don't know. Just feel free to ask me anything. I'm sort of just rambling a little bit.
No, you're fine. This is fascinating because you're absolutely right. You know, I talk to a lot of people since I started doing the show that do that try to do indie film. That do indie film, we should say. That by the time they get to me, they've pretty much done it. But you know, you're absolutely right. There isn't any like time for read-throughs or things like, you know, well, maybe I'll do my character this way or that. I mean, usually it's you're on, baby, and, you know, we've got 3 days, so get it done, you know, and that's, we're moving on. That's nice as an artist, I would imagine, to be able to develop the characters. And did you make, was the story pretty much done, or were you doing rewrites as things happened? How was that process?
So I don't really, at least in this shoot, we stuck to the script really, you know,
nice.
Pretty closely to what, when the script was finished. And of course that was many, many drafts, but when the script was basically done, we stuck to that script. The difference in this shoot is that because we had a lot of dance in it, when I brought in our artistic director in one sequence, he's auditioning for the guys, and one of them is my lover, Brandon Wykowski, who's trying to, he's a troubled ballet dancer trying to make a comeback, so he's trying to get in New York Ballet Company. And so this very distinguished guy comes with the ballet master, and they're doing these auditions with the four guys, Brandon being one of them. And in that, I hired people from the studio. I hired people from West Side School of Dance or West Side School of Ballet that I knew, that I had worked with. I hired John J. Todd, who was a fantastic teacher there, and I had played first classes, and so he became the teacher in the film. I had worked with Nader Hamed, who was our, you know, taught the professional classes there, and danced with Nureyev for 4 years. I mean, a very accomplished artist. And so I said, you know, Nader, listen, I know you're super busy. Can you come on a Sunday? I'm shooting at the ballet studio. Just come and do boys audition. And I was just hoping that he could improvise something, because that's in the script. That might be a paragraph of, you know, Brandon auditions with, you know, three other guys or something, but it's
right.
No dialogue. It's just dance. So Nader came in, and I didn't know he's from Egypt. I didn't know that he was a TV star in Egypt before he became, and then he became a ballet dancer and traveled around the world. So he just came in and he took over. And that's all improvised within the framework that I gave them, because he could set up the auditions just like something that you would do in real life. So that was the idea. And so I was pleasantly surprised. I go, man, this guy is great. Look at him. Just let him go. But
that's odd. That's like just fell into your lap too. How cool is that? You know, people pay big money for that kind of input.
I have the connections all right there because I'd spent so much time at the ballet studio. I have four kids that are, you know, adults now. They're in their 20s, but my two daughters, when they were growing up, they spent about 10 years taking ballet classes at West Side Ballet. So I knew the studio well. I knew the people there. They were very gracious to allow me to all of us to come in with our crew and our dancers. It was kind of a big deal to do all those ballet sequences in their big studio. So that was quite generous that they would agree to that, to let us shoot there. It's an indie film. We didn't have a big budget. We had two locations, except for drone shots and the beach shots, because this is Southern California, so you got to show all that stuff. But, you know, it was either the ballet studio and the professional studio, and we shot there for about, I was there for about 20 hours, literally one day, just trying to get all of the sequences. And then we shot at my family property in Venice, and I literally took over the property. I used one bungalow. We have six bungalows, but we were supposed to be the Holden household, right, like a regular house. So in one bungalow, I had the kids' bedrooms. In another one, I had the living room. In another one, I had my bedroom. So it just, you know, it's just like we used what made sense and where we wouldn't have to pay money for, or a lot of money for locations, because that can, you know, all those things, travel, locations, all that stuff eats up your budget.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And now, folks, a couple quick messages from some of our show sponsors. Stay tuned. We'll be back with the rest of the interview after these quick messages.
The Starlight Lounge presents An Evening with the Progressive Box.
Old moon, yeah. That's Hugo tickling the ivories. He just saved by bundling home and auto with Progressive. Gonna finally buy a ring for that gal of yours, Hugo? Send her my condolences. Hi-oh! This next one's for you, too. There's a burglar in my heart. Thank you.
Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Discounts not available in all states or situations.
Support for this podcast comes from the University of Texas MD Anderson Cancer Center, ranked one of the top cancer centers in the nation for the last 27 years. The doctors at MD Anderson treat more rare cancers in a single day than many physicians see in a lifetime. And treatment plans are tailored to an individual patient's needs, allowing more comprehensive and thorough care. To become a patient, please visit makingcancerhistory.com.
Well, it's cool that you know, and it just goes to show, and I tell everybody, I don't care what business you're in, if you're in a creative business, man, networking is so key. Be nice to everyone, because you never know, you know, 6 months down, a year down the road, you know, you could be working with these people. You may need a favor from so I need a kayak for this project. I know somebody who's got one. You know, there's just, it's good to have all these cards in your hand, you know, and to be able to use those as you need them to get your project done. That's very cool.
It's so
true. Very inspiring.
You should be nice to everyone, just to be nice to everyone. But beyond that,
right,
especially in art circles or in the entertainment business, you never know. Someone can win an Academy Award 1 year, and then no one wants to hire them the next year. They could have, like, you know, a couple of pictures that bomb or something, which is an interesting pattern with awards, because you see, like, a Shirley MacLaine winning for Terms of Endearment, then she does Cannonball Run, you know, or some, like,
right,
see, like, oh, this, you know, this, like, artistic achievement, and then they're doing, you know, but that's how it goes in art. But yeah, I mean, I know people that I was going to hire for a short film. I don't know if I should mention their names, but they were just kind of, you know, talented, obviously, and good looking, but nobodies. And now they're huge stars. So I don't know if they take my call now, but, you know, I mean, so you just never know how
it happens.
Career's going to go.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And, you know, It's just, I had a good friend of mine that used to be, he was an actor, like one of the things you do. And when I first moved to Southern California, he told me, you know, he said, Man, he goes, in this business, if you have a bad day, just save it till you get home and are by yourself, because you don't want to have, you don't want anybody hearing you complaining about stuff and carrying on, because you might be working with them 6 months. You know, it's, you got to be mindful.
Well, also, you know, I pride myself. I probably shouldn't even say this. I'm superstitious, so I'm gonna knock on my door here, knock on wood. But I really, one thing about me is I pride myself on being professional. So I don't bring my personal stuff to the set. You know, I just go. I try to do the right. very best job I can. I'm nice to everyone. And I mean, that's not so hard for me, because I'm genuinely a nice person. So, it's, you know, some people are very contentious, so they like conflict. But generally, if you're on a set, there's so many moving parts. You just have to do your job. That's it. Do what you're supposed to do. And you know, it's a little different in an indie film, because sometimes, you know, like me, I wasn't just one of the lead actors. I was the writer, the director, the producer. I did craft service. I mean, I didn't personally do craft service, but I, you know, paid to have someone, like a friend or some. Actually, I think it was one of our PAs or something, you know, come. I said, listen, can you go get the food? Go to Panda Express and get the food for lunch, because that's what everybody wants, you know. So you just do, you know, like 100 different roles. But it, my experience, it doesn't do any good to complain. I think that, you know, you don't want to be superficially positive, because that's just as annoying. But you just, you know, you just try to, because I've been in the Producers Guild, which is a guild that I absolutely love, for over 15 years. And the thing about producers, and people don't still don't really understand what producers do. It's kind of a little bit of a mystery. Mm-hmm. But the thing is, we solve problems. So you know, let's say a really big problem, your lead actor doesn't show up on the, they got drunk the night before, or something happened, or they got sick and they don't show up the next day, but you still have to shoot. You have to juggle your shooting schedule and figure out, what can we do today? Can we do some B-roll footage? Can we do, you know, what can we do that we can still keep moving forward? And that's kind of our joke, you know, like a little thing with other producers is, you know, being kind and courteous and respectful, and just, you know, keep moving forward though, no matter what. You know, show business, the show goes on. So you got to figure out a way to keep it going. So, yeah, I don't know what we do.
No, absolutely, absolutely. And that's, and you know, it's been a couple of years since this happened, but you remember back when old Lindsay Lohan was, I don't know, she was filming something for Disney and was, you know, having showing up late and stuff, and people were pissed. It was a problem, because everybody's got to get paid while they're waiting for her. You know, it's like you said, a lot of moving parts, and all, a lot of clockwork that needs to go normal. And then on an indie film, it's just, oh, we'll finish your thought.
Yeah,
go
ahead. I'm sorry. I was just going to say that, you know, I know a little bit about Lindsay, because she used to live around here in Venice. She had a condo that she was renting or something. And I'll just never forget that, because I like her, actually. I think, you know, mm-hmm. she had some addiction problems that she seems that she's, you know, worked out. But I think she's super talented. But, you know, she just had to learn some very hard lessons. And as far as like what we're talking about being respectful, showing up on time and being nice to everyone and not, you know, I remember, like, she said to, she was kind of, I think there was a little rivalry between her and Hillary Duff or something. And it was either her or Miley Cyrus. And she had just, was doing the Love Bug, you know, Disney's Love Bug, and they paid her a fortune at the time. They paid her $7 million, and so she was at a club, and she just like threw that in her rival's face. It was either Hillary Duff or Miley Cyrus, and the thing that was so horrifying, though, that you never want to happen, is she got called out, and this is where she really got in trouble, when she was doing Georgia Rules with Jane Fonda and Felicity Huffman and Garrett Hedlund, and you know, and I liked that movie. I thought it was a great movie, and you know, I thought she was great in it. But the producer, after, I don't know if it was during production or afterwards, sent an open letter to everybody calling her out on not showing up on time and all of her, the crap that she pulled. And I mean, you never want to get a letter like that. That's the one thing that I feel in the entertainment industry, whether you're rich or you're powerful or you're coming up, is you only have really one thing, and that's your character and that's your integrity. And if you don't have that and people distrust you, then forget it. You know, you can always, whether you have $1 million in the bank or 10 million, or you just have $100. If you carry your good character and integrity with you and your goodwill, that goes through the ups and downs of life. Everybody has good, you know, cycles and bad cycles. So I think it's, you know, you bring up a really good point. You just have to be a good person and pay it forward.
Absolutely. It's it's interesting on the accompaniment, the film, and I want to let people know too, we made a mistake, ladies and gentlemen, when we built the show page. This will be changed, but I want to let people know this is not a short. This is a feature film. Somehow short got put in there, and it's not. This is a fantastic film out today. It's available on all digital platforms, wherever you stream your movies from. And we're all experts of that right now, or have become experts of that. You know, you can get it today. You can watch it today. How cool is that? Now with this film, you said it was like 3 weeks or 3 months to polish the writing and whatnot to it, and then the film. What was the time like, the editing process and all of the post? You filmed the film and now you got to put it together. All the pieces are there. Was that a long journey as well?
Yeah, I mean, all the stages of making a film are long. I mean, you can't. It's such a exacting and, you know, technical art form that, and there's so many moving parts, you can't really skip the process. So, for example, with this, we had what I say are five phases of film production. So the first phase is I was sitting at the studio. I got this great idea. I thought it was great. And so I wrote the script. That took me about 3 months and many, many drafts and people, you know, I trusted looking at it and making changes. Then when I got the script to where I wanted it, I thought that, well, I can't make a feature. So then I took my features because I didn't have the money for a feature. But we could do a short. So I cut it all down. Cut the whatever it was 125 pages or whatever, and I cut it down to got it down to like 23 pages. I thought, well, we can shoot 23 pages and shoot a short. So then we had an Indiegogo campaign. So we started our quote pre-production. So the script, the feature was done, but we started with a short. And so we had an Indiegogo campaign, and we went through several months during 2018 of building our social media brand, the Indiegogo campaign. And then once we had the money, we set our shooting schedule, which was in October, and then we shot it. And then what happens in film is the editor will put together an assemblage for the director to look at. And so the DP and the director came to me and they said, hey, we put the assemblage together, 62 minutes. Why don't you go back next month and just shoot some more of your feature script and make it a feature film? You know, 62 minutes. That's not really a short. That's pretty long. So I said, okay. So I got my two lead actors back. They were kind enough to come back in November, and I paid them a little bit, you know, extra, obviously, for coming back. We shot all our, you know, the juicy stuff, all the emotional stuff that you just didn't have time to do in a short film, like the sex scenes, the fight scenes, all the drama, that emotional drama. And then once we did that, then the editor and I went in for 4 months of post. So I would, you know, he would put stuff together. I would come and look at it. And a lot of times I would sit with him while he edited. So that phase took, the post took from like December till we officially finished in April 23rd, 2019. And then after that, we started our film festival phase, our marketing phase. So that carried us through February of this year. And then we were fortunate to get our wonderful distributor, Dark Star Pictures, and our wonderful sales agents, Motion Picture Exchange. And we first sold at Cannes last year at the Cannes Film Festival of all places. We sold most
wow.
of Europe. And then, I know, shocker, right? I was just, we couldn't believe it. We thought, wow, this is great. We're all over Europe. And then we sold a Brazil territory at TIFF, another great festival. And then Dark Star stepped in for all the English-speaking countries and Dark Star Pictures.
Mm-hmm.
Fantastic company. Then we've been working with them and their PR team, October Coast, for this last phase, which is up to the release of the film, which is today. So it's kind of significant that we're talking today, preceding all this work that has gone into the film, but I literally did nothing for 18 months except work on this film. Nothing. It was just
wow.
this. Because that's what it takes to do a project and to try to do it to the best of your ability. You have to put everything that you have, time, love, passion, money, all of that into it. So here we are standing on the release date, and it's kind of like a dream come true. I can't believe that all these fantastic people went with me on this journey supporting the film. So it's exciting. I hope, you know, that audiences enjoy the film as well.
And now, folks, a couple quick messages from some of our show sponsors. Stay tuned. We'll be back with the rest of the interview after these quick messages.
Velvet Mayhem is super excited about their newest venture with MBM Music LLC. With MBM Music, we'll provide artists with a full-service platform to be seen and heard by assisting with necessary products, services, and fashion, all in an effort to increase exposure, fan base, and income. For more information, visit us at MBMMusicLLC.com. That's MBMMusicLLC.com. You create, we promote, plug in to the network.
Glittering amethyst, energizing citrate, colorful fluorite, the other side of the sun, Earth's treasures brought to light. Since 1999, we have offered a unique collection of hand-selected minerals and gems for every budget, for novices, collectors, and healers. Visit www.tosots.com to view our wide selection of offerings and use coupon code ROCKS, that's ROXX, for 10% off your first order. Remember, TOSOTS.com, Earth's treasures brought to light.
Hi, folks. Jamie Rocks here. Hey, if you're a big fan of cool historical books like me, then you're going to want to check out our newest show sponsor, Michelle Albion, a fantastic author. She's got some really interesting, cool books out that you're going to want to check out. I'm a big fan of all of these. The Florida Life of Thomas Edison, The Quotable Edison, Quotable Henry Ford, Quotable Eleanor Roosevelt, and, of course, The Quotable Amelia Earhart. Michelle's just very keen and very, very cool. And these are just very cool books. So check out her website. There's links to where you can pick these up on Amazon and Barnes & Noble all over the place. MichelleAlbion.com. 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 Very, very cool stuff. Check it out, folks.
Absolutely, absolutely. Well, you know that there's some listeners out there that have bought into, in their mind, the you see the Quentin Tarantino interviews, you know, and he's just working at a video store, and next thing you know, he's, you know, made a hit movie and flying around and dating models, and it's just one big party. That's not how it goes, ladies and gentlemen. Everybody I've never made a movie, but everybody I've talked to has a similar story. They work their butts off, man. They work their tails off on these. And, you know, like you said, 18 months. 18 months. Wow. That's a big deal. You know, that's a major project. I don't know how you did it, Frederick. That's amazing. Very inspiring.
Well, and,
you know?
And you're doing it. Well, thank you. And you're doing it for your love and passion and belief in what you're doing, but you're not doing it with the backing of a studio. I mean, I had a Rolex. Okay, so I was never really into watches, but I thought somehow I had $10,000 that I don't know how I got it, but anyway, I had a little extra money. Mm-hmm. So I thought I got interested in watches, and also I'm a big motorcycle guy. So, you know, I love motorcycles.
Right.
I would probably spend all my money on getting a Ducati or a BMW or something, but I kind of got into watches. And so I thought, well, Rolex, that's the, you know, the James Bond Submariner, that's the watch I want.
Mm-hmm.
So I went and bought the watch for like $10,000. And, you know, my family was kind of horrified. Like, you spent $10,000 on a watch? What are you, an idiot? You know? And so
right.
I wore this watch for a few months, but it was while I was making the film. And, you know, we always needed money. I mean, when you're making indie film, you always need money. You never get enough from a crowdfunding campaign. I used my savings, which I know you're not supposed to do, but, you know, I used my savings for this film because I believed in it. And so we needed some money. So I and took my watch and sold it back to Stein Diamonds or wherever I bought it downtown. And I used the money for the film because I figure, you know, I can always get a watch. I mean, but I can't always make a film. I can't make,
right,
you know, something that I won't always have the opportunity to make something that I believe in or have a passion for. So, yeah, but, you know, the good news is it looks like I might actually make my money back on this film, so maybe I will buy the Rolex, or I'll most likely buy another
They're
motorcycle.
They're keeping it for you.
You know, if I...
Yeah, there you go. That's an expensive hobby. Oh, my gosh. Yeah. No, I hear you, man. When I first moved to Southern California, I thought I'd made... I went to college in Boston, and then I wanted to go somewhere the total opposite of Boston. And so I wound up in San Diego, of all places. And I, when I first got out there, I had this opportunity to get this old Jag, an old XJ12. And I'm kind of a car guy. And I got it. And I just thought, you know, I'm like, I've made it. I'm driving along the coast here. And my Jaguar, this is hot stuff. But yeah, very similar thing. I had to sell it, you know, about a year down the road I needed money for a project I was doing. And it comes and goes. But
so just really quick story, I never thought about riding motorcycles. When I was a kid, back in my day, I had a lot of different go-karts, mini bikes. When we went to Mexico for our family vacations a couple of times a year, we had the dune buggies, that type of thing. But I never, because I didn't grow up in the country or something. I wasn't, you know, like kids that I knew, nobody rode motorcycles. It just wasn't in my sort of, you know, upper middle class upbringing.
Yeah.
You know, so, about 2 years ago, I got so sick of the friggin' traffic in LA, because it would take you like an hour to go, you know, 5 miles or something. So I thought, you know what, screw this. I'm just going to have to ride a motorcycle, because I know if I can ride a motorcycle, I can get around traffic and I can cut my time in half. So I took the motorcycle, the California Motorcycle Safety School, a couple days, and I didn't really even know if I could do it. I thought, well, I'm just going to give it a try. And I passed, you know, I passed the little course and test that they give you, and I passed the written test. So I got my M1 license, and then I bought it's a huge bike. It's really heavy. If I drop it, which I have a couple times when I first started riding, I cannot pick it up by myself. It's a Yamaha Super Tenere. which is known as kind of like a bulletproof bike. I've ridden it seven mountain states in 10 days. I've gone like 2,500 miles at least on it just in my little trip last summer that I did on the mountain states and up the Big Sur coastline. I did another trip. So it's a great, it's called an adventure bike. So it's great, but it's really heavy. You have to really pay attention when you're riding a motorcycle because one, you could get hurt or worse. And also, just even getting on the bike because it's so heavy, you have to be in the present moment and be aware of what you're doing so it doesn't fall over.
Right.
I have that
on
and
you.
Exactly, which it did one time in Carmel, and I thought I had a broken foot. And I had, like, the police department and the fire department. They were so nice. Everybody was there in 5 minutes and a whole line of cars staring at me, you know, with the bike on my leg. And I really thought my foot was broken, but I didn't want to go to the hospital. So that, you know, the police officer was saying, oh, well, can you know, like, let's get you to the hospital. I said, no, I'm fine. And so I finished riding the rest of my trip on probably a broken or badly sprained foot. I didn't know which, but I just did not want to go to the hospital. I didn't want to have a cast on my leg. It hurt for a few months after that. But I also, just the beginning of this year, I did splurge a little bit, and I bought another Yamaha, because they're great. The Japanese bikes are great. I bought an MT-09, which is a racer, because I had started racing, and that's a whole nother story. Uh-huh. But the MT-09 is red. It's like you getting the Jag. It's like getting like this, you know, Corvette or this Aston Martin or whatever. You know, just like getting this really cool sports car. And that one's really a blast to ride. But, you know, the thing with riding motorcycles is, and a lot of people don't ride motorcycles in L.A. because the traffic, you know, the drivers, it's just so crazy here. But I think you just really have to practice good safety in terms of just, you know, wearing your gear. Because I've seen people, like in Utah, they have no helmet law. So there's these guys in shorts and flip-flops and no helmet. I've seen going like 80 miles an hour, I'm going, that doesn't sound like a good idea. So you wear your gear.
It happens
and you
here
drive
in Florida, too.
Really?
I see them all the time. Oh, yeah. And I'm like thinking, are you just, you know, wanting to die?
Yeah.
On big bikes, too. I saw a guy in a Goldwing in flip flops the other day. We were driving, and I'm just like, that's weird. You know, that's. By the time you get to a Goldwing, you would think you had figured out flip-flops ain't the proper footwear to wear, you know, anywhere unless you're on the beach.
Well, if you know anything about riding motorcycles, if, God forbid, you fall or you have an accident or something happens, the first thing you want to do is have on good motorcycle boots because you got to protect your ankles. That's like really important. Actually, the most important, you got to protect your head because most fatalities occur, you know, on that area, like with the head, some kind of head injury. So you got to have a great helmet. But, you know, just, I mean, I wear the gear because you have a much better chance of surviving without, you know, like a lot of broken bones and stuff.
Absolutely. Absolutely. That's no fun at all. Well, very cool, man. Well, look at this. You've got a great motorcycle, and, you know, you're going to get your watch back. You got a movie that's released today. Life is good, baby. Life is good in Frederick Keeve world, you know? I mean, it's pretty awesome. And you're working on a sequel already. How about that? You know?
And I've attracted a tremendous team of Emmy winning, you know, some of the crew are Emmy winners. I've had a legendary actress read for one of the parts, you know. It's like, bigger, better, bolder, more dance, it's more everything in the sequel. So it should be a lot of fun.
Very cool. Are you doing an Indiegogo campaign for that one as well, or are you going a different route this time?
Yeah, I would not. I don't think, I shouldn't say never, but I don't think I could do another crowdfunding because that is, it's just beyond brutal.
I didn't want to say anything.
It's awful.
I've got a good friend of mine that's
she's a singer. She's had, I don't know, she's got like 7 or 8 CDs out, and every one she's done crowdfunding. And she told me, and you know, and her day job when she's not singing and whatnot, she sells commercial real estate. She said, I had to quit the commercial real estate when I'm doing the crowdfunding because that's a full-time job, man. That is 80 hours every week, nonstop, you know, just to do it properly. I'm like, holy bro. You know, I guess they have people that you can hire, but still, you're giving your money away, you know? That's no good.
It's so tough. I think it's – I prefer for this because it's a bigger budget. It's our budget right now, it's like 1.8. So for an indie film, like for me, that's a big budget. When you're looking at almost $2 million, for me, that's like a $100 million studio film or something, you know? And so I just right. feel like – you know, we've been talking about high
Frederick's got his golf cart. Oh man,
I've got my golf
riding
cart
around
with the
his
gold
ball
bricks
on.
And back. I'm heading over
That's
to the
right.
bank with you know. No, and I think you know, with a budget like that for an indie film, you get your high net worth individual, or you partner with a, you know, maybe a Plan B, or you know, like a Brad Pitt company or somebody, you know, a company that would support an independent mm-hmm. film that they believed in and had the money or access to money, I guess access to money through banks to back it up. So that's hopefully where we're headed.
Yeah, that's nice. That's a good position to be in. Well, the cool thing, here's something to learn for our listeners out there, our upcoming filmmakers and people that want to get into that business. It's very important you get access to funds, man. But in doing that, what helps a lot is having something called a track record, you know, and, Frederick, you know, was very smart in how they did that, because basically with your short, how you did that, if I'm understanding this right, you really had a proof of concept right there. You could show people and did, and they said, yeah, this is fantastic. Here you go. Let's do more.
That is a good way to go. I think what is unusual about this film is our short didn't become more than a short. I mean, the short grew into a full-length film. So I've never heard that happening before. Usually it would be a short, it wins some festivals, someone sees it, then they come back like a couple of years later
and redo the whole thing.
But yeah, right. But this was just, again, just a sort, I don't know, again, there's magic in the film, magical realism, sort of magical process out there in the universe, but it all sort of came together. But, you know, realistically, in the entertainment business, especially filmmaking, there's so many things that don't go right. There's so much rejection. There's so many things that go wrong making a film. When everything kind of coalesces to come together, then you think it must be a gift from the gods, because it usually doesn't happen that way. I want to just hopefully carry this magical process into the sequel and have that good juju or good vibes or whatever continue, which it seems to be. So again,
that's
knocking
fantastic.
On wood, because I'm superstitious, but
yeah, no, I hear you, man. I'm knocking on wood over here for you too. You know,
oh, thank
you're
you.
Right.
I need it.
When things do go right, it is such a, you know, in any business really, but especially in entertainment, because man, you have to have you better develop some thick skin. If you're insecure and you're not used to people saying, you know, no thanks, you're in the wrong game, man. You ain't gonna do well. You're gonna have to, that's things you have to develop, you know, and it's, you know, just do your best and do your all, you know. It's like Frederick when he was being a sleaze stack. He was the best damn sleaze stack they ever saw.
He got those steps, right?
Well,
KY
know,
jelly
you,
and all.
When I don't know that I've ever told that story on the air, but you know what's interesting is that it for 4 months. I mean, it was a really good payday because even as a, we weren't exactly background, we were more like featured actors in it. But you know what's great is that when you get to beyond 16 hours, it's called golden time. So when you can do that 17 and 18, you get paid for a full day each hour that you go over in golden time.
Wow.
So that's
that is golden.
I mean, some days, I think some days, probably some of our Sleestacks were making like, you know, like $4,000 in one day or some incredible amount of money.
That's
for
not
what
bad.
We were doing because...
Man, sign me up. I'd wear a rubber suit for that. That's right.
I don't know. If you're claustrophobic, it would not work because, oh, my God.
Oh, they wouldn't have me. They wouldn't have me. They'd put me as one of those monkey men. I'm short.
How tall are you?
5'6". Here's the funny thing, Frederick. 5'6"? I am 5'6", and my wife, Danny, is 6'1". So, yeah, people are always looking at us going, what the hell is that? You know, how did happen?
We're gonna sign her up to be a Sleestack.
Yes, she would be
sequel.
A good Sleestack. There you go.
I don't know. The thing that I try to find is because life is so absurd anyway, it seems like there must be a group of higher level beings of some sort looking down on the human race and going, oh my God, these idiots, what are they doing? You know, they're just like,
right.
They're sort of, you know, like the Shakespeare, what fools these mortals be. So I feel like, you know, to find the humor in life is really, you have to, because it life, isn't it? I mean, it's so unpredictable. You never know what's going to happen. And it's so absurd.
Oh,
and especially these days, it's even more like the Twilight Zone or the Walking Dead or something. That it's like, you just, so I always try to, I have a lot of funny stories on tap with, you know, different, you know, famous actors or just funny situations because, you know, like I work a lot with, I have in the past, I've worked with Jeff Goldblum because I'm kind of like a Jeff Goldblum lookalike. We're very similar.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm almost as high. We both play piano. We got some similarities, but you know, I mean, somebody like Jeff, for example, he's just the sweetest guy and the best actor, and he'll come onto set and he just brings such a great vibe. I mean, when I worked on Reigns, which was with him the first time, which was a 1-hour crime drama for NBC, everybody wanted to work on our set. They wanted to be on our crew because it was such a great vibe with the whole production. And Jeff's funny because he's like a Jimmy Stewart. He's like an everyman, you know, like he'll come in and it doesn't matter if you're the lowliest background person or something, he'll come up, the girls he'll hug, or at least, I don't know if that's permissible now, but you know, anyway, you know, he appreciates beautiful women very respectfully, of course, but he'll come up and he'll shake your hand and he'll want to know, like when I first met him, he'll go, what's your name? Frederick. What's your last name? Keeb. Well, very, you know, and he wants to know all about you. What big star does that? I mean, he's just, you know,
right.
Jeff. He's such a funny character. But yeah, I think finding the humor in life is a really good thing to do.
Oh, you have to. You have to. I just watched a movie on Amazon with him in it that I had no idea even existed. Him and Jodie Foster, one of these 15 seconds into the future type deal. But he played a mafia guy, like a mobster, and did it really well. But, yeah, you don't expect it. I loved him. You know what role I really loved him in? It reminded me a little bit of it. I don't know. You might not remember this movie, but there was a movie many, many years ago called TGIF, Thank God It's Friday. And he was a sleazy club, like nightclub owner. And so totally different from what you expect Jeff Goldblum to play. It was great.
Oh, well, you know? And the genius about Jeff is that he is the most likable person on the planet, but he can play, you know, because he's such a great actor, he can play those really dark characters. And I think he probably enjoys it because his actual personality is so friendly and light, but yeah, he can do that. And the movie you referred to, I was actually in. I worked with him. It's called Hotel Artemis. which I never
yes,
saw.
Yes, Hotel Artemis. I didn't know you were in that. That was a fantastic movie. I watched it the other – I took lunch, and I was flipping through Amazon, and I said, well, what's this? You know, it suggests stuff to you, and I said, well, okay, I'll watch this. Sounds pretty good.
Well,
2 hours later,
my job on that
I finished it.
Well, that's interesting because I've never seen it, and the movie bombed. Like, it didn't do any business. And I don't know if it's just, you know, whether – well, you liked the movie. I don't know if the reviews weren't good or the timing wasn't good for the release or just wasn't promoted properly. But when I did it, they asked me to double Jeff, you know, like to do the stand-in stuff and all that, which I've loved doing that. It's fun. So I said I would do it. But that's me, for example – underneath the sheet when they have that sort of climactic sequence where he's kind of the bad guys are fighting. And I think Jeff is dead because the female Sophia, whatever her name is, she slit his throat or something. So he's dead.
Right. Yeah.
The
assassin. That's,
right. And that was me. And I tell you, that was really scary because, they were so realistic in their fight scene. They kept hitting me, but hitting me really hard to the point that it hurt. But I'm a professional. I didn't want to
move.
I didn't want to.
That's right.
I didn't want to say anything. But I was thinking, like, shouldn't the safety coordinator put a Fernie pad, like, so that my knee isn't damaged or something? And after they'd done like 50 takes, somebody finally asked to go, "Oh, are you okay in there?" So I go, well, I'm a bit sore, actually. Because when they fight and they fall across the table on his dead body covered by a sheet, mm-hmm. I never knew where they were going to hit me, but I could never move. So these are, you know, some of the funny things that happen in making movies, you know, or interesting,
oh,
I guess.
Oh, that's funny. That's interesting. Yeah, like, I just watched that. That's amazing. Very cool. Well, I am impressed. And I'm impressed that The Accompanist is out today. See, folks, we brought it back around. It is out today. I want everybody to go to their, you know, their streaming and check it out and rent that today and, you know, support indie film. How about that?
Thank you so much, Jamie. And please check out our website that we've been building for ever since the beginning of pre-production. It's at The Accompanist Movie. You'll see all kinds of wonderful content. And if you want to reach out to me, I'm F, as in Fred, Keeve, my last name, F-K-E-E-V-E. On Instagram, feel free to reach out to me. Probably
nice.
Not today because we're Blackout Tuesday.
A busy day today.
Back to what's... Right. So, but and then check us out, The Accompanist, on Amazon, Insta, and iTunes. Yeah, and it's been so much fun talking to you, Jamie.
Oh, absolutely. And you know, the funny thing, before we started the show, we were talking a little bit off mic, and you know, I'm like, so Frederick, are you good for 20 minutes or so? Here it is, an hour and 20 minutes later. I'm so sorry. But you're fascinating to talk to,
Flow. I seriously, I did one interview with this gentleman, and we were the interview was supposed to go like 20 minutes. We did an hour and a half, but I feel like if you are able to do it and you just kind of go with the flow, you know, just do it. I mean, there's other shows that I've done where the person is a sort of like a media empire where they, you know, you just go in mm-hmm. and you have 20 minutes and they stick to that 19 minutes and 30 seconds and you just answer. And those are great too. I mean, you squeeze a lot in you only have that amount of time. So I was actually just occasionally glancing at the clock and I thought, well, we've got over, this is really fun. So I'm enjoying it. So I'm just really honored that you would want to spend the time with me and keep asking questions. It's pretty
absolutely
cool.
And I can't wait till the sequel for The Accompanist is, you know, down the road a little bit, and we can have you back. And this time we'll talk Westworld. So we didn't even touch on that, you know, and all your soap opera stuff. You know, and I don't think there's been a TV crime show you haven't been on. You know, I mean, I was looking through the thing, hundreds of them. It's amazing.
I like working and you know, like I don't do background anymore, obviously, but I've enjoyed being a stand-in and doing featured background and all of these things, you know, in the past has been really fun. And it all adds up to where I am today, because even if you're just an atmosphere or background extra, if you're smart and you're nice and you meet people and you observe, you can learn so much by being on set. And what is more fun than being on set? It's the greatest thing in the world.
Absolutely. Well, congratulations on everything, man, your success and the movie out today and just at all, you know? Very, very cool. I'm
going to be looking, Jamie, I'm going to be looking for, well, thank you. I'm going to be looking for one of your art shows to be coming to Los Angeles sometime so I can check out your art. Or maybe go to your website. And do you have a website where you sell your art? Or?
Oh, yeah. JamieRocks.us. Yep. And it's, awesome. You know, we get out there occasionally. I think that, you know, it's weird because all the plans, and you know this as well, in your business, you know, the COVID thing just really threw a monkey wrench and a lot of plans got pushed back, you know. And we were going to do a thing in Vegas, and it just, let's hope that everybody comes out okay, you know, the businesses and whatnot, galleries. The galleries having a tough time right now.
You know, yeah, I mean, things will, you'll be able to travel at some point, hopefully soon. So, you know, well, maybe, who knows, we can meet in Vegas and I could see. I'm such an admirer of
LA is always a fun town.
Absolutely. It's a pretty great place.
I don't mind hanging out with, you know, cool people in LA. Not a problem. I'll rent a bike. We'll go up to Big Sur or something, you know? Sounds good to me.
Get your M1 license, and I got an extra bike and an extra helmet, so you can always ride with me.
Oh, there we go. There we go. That's a dream, man. That is a fantasy right there. I would love that. Very, very cool. Well, we're right up against the time, ladies and gentlemen, and, you know, Frederick's a busy man. He's got his movie out today. I've kept him too long. So let's wrap things up. But thank you so much, Frederick, for being on the show. Frederick Keefe, everybody. And, you know, just keep doing what you're doing. You're so good at it, and I can't wait to see more.
Thank you so much. It's been a real pleasure. I really appreciate your time.
Absolutely. Anytime, man, anytime. Well, folks, we will be back. Let's see, when will we be? We'll be back Friday, actually. I took a couple days off. I got a bunch of stuff. I've got a bunch of commissions that came in that I got to get knocked out. I'll be working my tail off on those. But we will be back with a whole new show this Friday, and we will see you then. This episode, of course, will be converted to a podcast and pushed out on all the various social media platforms and all the podcasting platforms, including Apple Podcasts. How about that? We're also on TuneIn and all the stuff. But if you are listening to the show in the future, hello from the past, do me a favor, it doesn't cost anything, and it only takes a second, hit that ratings and review. It keeps us up at the top of the page, and boy, does that just annoy all my exes. No, I'm kidding. They don't know about it, I'm sure. But what it does do is our advertisers answer the phone when I call, so that's a good thing. We will see you next time, everybody. Have a good one. Thanks a lot, Frederick. You rock.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Bye.
This has been pop art painter Jamie Rocks's Pop Rocks Radio Talk Show. It has been executive produced by Jamie Rocks, recorded at his studio in Deerfield Beach in South Florida. All rights reserved by Pop Rocks Limited for broadcast on Blog Talk Radio.
Estás escuchando Jamie Rocks de Pop Rocks Radio. Manténganse al tanto.
Hej, det här är Hicks från Sverige och ni lyssnar till Pop Rocks Radio med Jamie Rocks.
Blog Talk Radio.